Welcome to Public Square, Conversations in Democracy, where we explore the heart of democracy. I'm your host, Witte van Renswijk, on a mission to reboot the public sector and invigorate local democracies worldwide. Join us as we spotlight game changers, share visions, and practical innovations. Let's begin today's inspiring conversation. Today, I'm crossing the channel and I find myself in London, more specifically in the London Borough of Newham. And today we're welcoming not just one, but two guests on the podcast, and that for the first time. We're inviting the power duo behind Newham's People Powered Places program, Sadia Urahman and Emily Pallette. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Sadia. Hi, Emily. Great to have you here. So today we're going to talk about the People Powered Places program, but before we jump in, I think it's helpful for you to introduce us a little more to the London Borough of Newham. What are you known for? Maybe just take us there for everyone who's listening now. We are in the London Borough of Newham. What are we seeing?
What are we seeing? Well, it's sunny today, which is unusual for a January in the UK, which is really nice. And I thought I would talk us through a little bit about what Newham is well known for. So in terms of what we're well known for, it is one of the most innovative boroughs when it comes to participatory democracy in the UK. And this started in 2018 with the new mayor, Roxana Fiaz, and her pledge to put residents at the heart of everything we do. So multiple initiatives were started then, including the participatory budgeting programme that we both work on and that we'll be telling you all about. And in 2019, what was really exciting was that a democracy commission was put in place to assess how democracy works in Newham, and recommendations were made in 2020. A comprehensive report came out of this piece of work, and it was a driver for real change, and a range of innovative participatory processes have been implemented throughout the borough since. And People Power Places is one of those initiatives. Other things that you might not know about Newham is that it's one of the most diverse boroughs in London and also across the country, with over 100 languages spoken here, which is a phenomenal number. It's known for having held the Olympic Games in 2012 for those around the world who were watching at the time. And it's also a borough which is transforming a lot. It has loads of challenges at the moment that residents are facing with the current cost of living crisis. But what we also have here is a really resilient community.
Awesome. Thanks for that introduction. And I always start this podcast with a personal question, which goes as following. I would like to know, what is your first memory of democracy, or a moment that has really defined you, a moment when you realized what the power of community engagement is?
Yeah, I can go for that one. I think for me, it's not necessarily a first memory, but a very strong moment of community engagement. It's when I started working for this small organization in France, in Saint-Étienne, which is a medium-sized city with lots of challenges around vacant spaces. And we were doing a lot of work with residents in terms of co-designing public spaces and really putting power in the hands of residents, not only in terms of co-design, but also enabling them to also change the city directly with, like, using tools and using things like, you know, temporary benches in the public space, for example. And one thing that we did was engaging with children in particular. And I think that was a very powerful moment for me in terms of realizing how different voices in the community can be represented differently. So I think children in particular are often not necessarily kind of seen as citizens, in the sense that in the representative democracy, they're not actually able to vote or influence political decisions, but they are a really important part of our community. And when we engaged with them, it was really, really powerful the way that they were explaining to us the way that they were living the city and how they were, like, experiencing the city, like, not very safe in terms of, like, being around the car and things like that. And then we organized a play street as well to kind of, like, enable them to experience the city in a safe way. So I think for me, that was a very powerful moment in terms of thinking, how do we engage very different parts of the community and not just just the regular, like, adults who are able to vote, and, like, different ways of engaging.
That's a great example, Emily. Makes me think we're going to talk about the People Powered Places program today. I'm very curious to know whether you're also engaging children and youngsters in the program today. But maybe let's first take a step back before we get into that. So Newham's People Powered Places program, that's a lot of P's, triple P, four P's even. What is this program about, and why does it exist in the first place, Hadja?
So the People Powered Places program in Newham for us is a really pioneering approach to participatory democracy. It enables residents to have a direct say in how public funds, particularly neighbourhood community infrastructure levy, is allocated within their community. It's essentially a participatory budgeting initiative that empowers our residents to shape their neighbourhoods by determining the allocation of a significant portion of funding. The programme isn't only about making funding decisions, which is what the critical thing here is. It's about deepening engagement and collaboration between residents, local organisations, the council, and ensuring that community needs and priorities are absolutely critical and central to local development. The programme has been running since 2018, and it's now grown from a quite radical local approach to participation to a full-scale participatory programme supported by Newham Co-Create as an online platform.
Awesome. And when you say a radical local programme, what do you mean by the word radical?
Well, I mean in terms of giving... That was 5 years ago, and that's given residents the opportunity to really shape how money is spent in their local areas and on a hyperlocal basis. So Newham is broken up into 8 community neighbourhoods, and our residents were able to make decisions that were directly affecting them in their neighbourhoods. And it was quite small initially, with only £25,000 per neighbourhood, but it has grown quite a lot since then.
Okay. And to, because you're now in the third cycle, right? So budget-wise, like you said, £5,000 per initiative. And what are we talking about today?
So each neighbourhood now has £200,000 over a 2-year period. So that's just over £1.6 million. And residents can apply for up to £5,000 for projects that they want to realise in their neighbourhoods. And our voluntary community and faith sector groups can apply for up to £20,000. Yeah.
That's really impressive, because I think it would be really interesting to put it into perspective and compare it to other cities. I mean, I have had quite some exposure in participatory budgeting programs working with different governments. And I think what you typically see is, you know, starting at, depends on pounds, euros, US dollars, but roughly like 200,000, 500,000, the biggest city up to 1 million. But going beyond the million is really impressive. So, that's fantastic to hear. Let's try to jump into the process. I'm eager to hear a little more about the design of the program. So what are actually the different steps in your participatory process?
Yeah, so that's something that we've really worked on this year, especially in terms of simplifying the process and making sure that residents have a really good understanding of what they're doing and what they're doing it for. So it starts with choosing local priorities for the neighbourhood. So it starts with engaging with residents with what is happening in your neighbourhood, what are the issues, what are you facing, and what do you want to kind of address as a community. So this year, we really tried to link up the council strategy with the local priorities. So residents were invited to come to an event where they were presented with 6 themes where they kind of like could choose which of the themes they wanted to prioritize locally. And then they could choose, so transform those themes in 3 local priorities per community neighborhood. That was a really interesting way of doing it, because we could really see the local priorities shifting for this cycle from previous cycles. So one interesting aspect of it has been the prioritization of health and well-being as a priority. Whereas before we had a lot of priorities around green spaces and fly tipping and kind of cleaner, greener neighbourhoods. So we've really seen, I guess, potentially the impact of the pandemic as well, and kind of thinking about health and well-being in the community. So that's been a really interesting aspect of it. So that's the first step. The second step is thinking about solutions. So after residents have been chatting about, you know, what's important to prioritise in their community neighbourhood, they start thinking about ideas. So how could we address those priorities? So we invite them again to have come to a 2-hour events where we support them to think about what could be solutions and how can we make sure that those solutions are also feasible solutions and that there could be solutions that could be funded by the People Power Places program. So this has been also a very interesting process that we've done this year in terms of bringing in council officers from other services as well to make sure that it's a very collaborative process as well. So we had over 30 experts from like different council services who came in, chatted with residents, chatted with organisation and kind of were thinking, okay, how can you bring your really brilliant idea into a project that could actually be funded by this programme and could be delivered within the 1-year delivery that the project, the programme allows as well.
I guess then the experts, they are the ones who are making up like the feasibility study and are assessing whether it's doable, right?
Exactly. So that's the first step of our feasibility process, which is a direct collaboration within the events where experts are giving guidance to people who would like to apply for funding. And then there's a different second phase of feasibility process, which is after residents and organizations apply for funding officially through an application process. And then each of the application which are happening in the public space are reviewed by our services as well to make sure that they are feasible, that they are properly budgeted as well, and to make sure that they can be delivered to the highest impact possible as well. So once they've kind of like started talking about solutions, they can apply for funding. So residents, as Sadia said, could apply for up to £5,000 and organisation up to £20,000. And that's when the working groups come in. So the working groups is a co-production model where we have residents at each of the community neighbourhoods who are recruited for the length of the cycle, and they get involved at each different step of the process and they are paid. So they are also in this part of the co-production model where they are more regularly engaged as well than the residents who come to our open-ended events. So those working group members are people from the community who know their community neighbourhood really well, and they then assess the applications to make sure that each of the applications that are coming through can have the highest impact in the community neighbourhood. So that's called the shortlisting phase. So once all the projects have been shortlisted, then they go through the voting phase. So the voting phase is the very exciting part of the participatory budgeting process, obviously. So this year was called the big vote. We had a lot of engagement, and this is where obviously it's been also very exciting, and we can talk about this later in terms of participation levels as well. So we had over 10,000 residents taking part in the voting, so some of them online through our new co-create platform and some of them in person in our local libraries as well and community centres. And then so the first projects that get the most votes are then allocated funding, and then they can start delivery. So we then have allocated this year in the kind of like new version of the cycle, the 2-year cycle, they have 1 year to deliver their projects. And this was also something that was really, really important in terms of how we redesign the program to make sure that there's enough time and enough support for all the residents and organizations to deliver really impactful projects.
Awesome. I've got a couple of quick follow-up questions to that. So it's very clear the process. It makes total sense. We start from the problem statement, ideation on possible solutions. From there, you develop them into projects. In the meantime, you also, of course, make a feasibility assessment. And then those projects are up for the big vote, after which there's the implementation phase. So I think that's really clear process. Couple of things that triggered my interest. So the first one I find interesting, did you design the process differently for organizations compared to individuals?
Come in and answer that, Rizzi. So in terms of, there isn't that much different for the two strands. What we do have are different application forms for each. So we've got a voluntary community faith sector application form, and we've got a resident application form, and they go through the same shortlisting process in terms of our working groups will look at their applications. Council officers will look at their applications in terms of whether they're feasible, and our working groups will also look at them in the same way that they'd look at our resident applications too.
Okay, got it.
I think one interesting process that we have in place as well is we commission an organisation called Compost London, who supports residents as well So that's one thing that enables us as a council to give grants directly to individual residents through the partner organization, and that acts as a third party banker. So that's also an important setup, because it's actually quite rare for councils to directly kind of give a grant to an individual residents, as opposed to an organization that is set up as a formal organization as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And in terms of the participation, because you said over 10,000 residents participated in the vote, right? Did the whole group of people, did they already participate in the previous phase? Or do you see that some people might participate in, let's say, the problem statements, others in another phase, and then others in later stage?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. We have definitely residents who have been here with us since 2018. So we have very committed residents who were here since the beginning when it was called Community Citizens Assemblies, and who have been through all the different stages, and who are really great also at kind of acknowledging all the progress that has been made on the program in terms of increasing the impact of the program as well. And we also have new residents coming in regularly. So we capture that as well as part of the sort of evaluation measures, is how many new residents coming to each of these events. And then the voting is also different, because people could vote directly online. So we've definitely seen among those like over 10,000 residents, a large proportion of them have never necessarily voted before, because in the previous cycle, we had 2,800 people voting. So obviously that's a huge increase in terms of the amount of people who voted this year. So we're pretty confident that a lot of them would not have participated before. Just to get a sense as well, so each of the events, so our priorities and our solutions, the two events that we had in terms of priority setting and solutions, idea generation, had around 700 in total across the eight community neighborhoods as well. Yeah,
that's pretty impressive. I read in a report that you had more than 200 projects funded, right? Or that have been funded so far. So that's a pretty impressive result. Can you share an example of such a project that has been implemented? And a side question I also have is, how does the delivery of that project actually happen? As in, the people who were part of the ideation and the whole, making the project come alive, or are they the ones who are also helping with the implementation? Or is that fully on you, the borrower, to take care of the implementation, Emily?
Yeah, So we had over 200 funded across since 2018. But actually, if you take into account the 120 projects that are starting delivery, at the moment, we're just over 300 as well. So yeah, it's pretty impressive. And I think it does kind of also highlights how much this program has delivered over the years. We've had definitely many, many different types of projects. A lot of them were around kind of community gardening, making Newham's neighbours cleaner and safer, etc. But we've also had very innovative examples which have come a long way in terms of like the impact, not just of their project, but afterwards. And a really good example is a project called the Barber Connect Project, which is a project which was started by a local barber who lives in Custom House and Canning Town. And he basically had a really sad experience of one of his young clients who passed away because of knife crime. And then he really wanted to start an initiative to kind of make a difference in his neighborhood in terms of keeping the youth safe in Newham. And he started this project, which is an initiative to teach barbering skills to young people in Newham, and also then bring them on to have employment opportunities in the borough. And this has been a really, really successful project. He got a lot of attention in Newham, and in terms of like obviously the impact on the young people, but also beyond Newham. So we had people from other boroughs across London who have also been interested in this initiative. So community safety teams in other kind of London boroughs have been interested in thinking about how you can actually work with local businesses in your borough to support community safety and bring youth safety into a sort of more innovative way of entering youth safety in London. So I think that's a really, really great example of like how the participatory budgeting program is enabling those really incredible projects, but also having wider impacts in terms of service delivery and London Borough, and like those big priorities across London as well.
Awesome. Could you tell a little more about the delivery of the projects? So are the people who are involved in shaping the projects, are they the ones implementing it, or what is kind of the whole co-construction model here?
Yeah, so I think it basically works a little bit like grant funding in terms of the delivery aspect. So once people have applied for funding and got the funding after the voting process, for those who were successful, who had the most votes, they have 1 year to deliver their project. And we do grant monitoring and we make sure that those projects are delivered properly. So this is kind of like the way that we almost act as a funder at this stage. But it's really interesting because we obviously do that through resident engagement again as well through our working groups. So we have residents who are involved in the working groups locally, the one who've been shortlisting those projects. They then get in touch with the project leads, they meet the project leads, and they support them throughout the process as well. So one of the interesting things, for example, is site visits. So residents kind of come and go to wherever the session is delivered, or like the community garden workshops, to check in, see how many residents are involved and what's happening on the ground. So there's really that level of engagement throughout the year, the full year of delivery that they have, where residents come in. So that's for the residents who are the working groups who are regularly engaged throughout the process. And then we have our open access events, the one where people choose priorities, choose solutions, etc. So that's also something where we organize an event to check in on the progress of the projects as well. So at the moment, just to give you an idea, so we've just started the delivery phase in January. So residents and organizations are starting to put in place their project, and it will start delivery across until December. And in June, we have an event where in each of the community neighborhood project leads will be invited to come in and showcase their progress. And this is what we've been doing. Remember, you voted for us in November and we've started in January, and this is where we're at. And then that really gives an opportunity for residents across Newham, wherever their like background, just come in and check in what's been happening.
That's fantastic, Emily, that you not only stop at the moment of the vote, but that you're actually still following up after the vote and making sure that the projects get delivered. Sadia, let's zoom out for a moment and talk a little more about the impact of the program. So could you tell us a little more about the impact so far? And I'm also interested in knowing a bit more about how do you actually measure and evaluate the impact of this program and community engagement?
What's been a key success of the program, firstly, and the impact of the program, is the direct empowerment of our local residents to actively participate in shaping their local areas. The program's really exciting in terms of the numbers involved. So we've had thousands of residents involved in decision-making processes and ensuring that our funded projects truly reflect the diverse needs and desires of the community. And then in terms of sort of measuring and evaluating impact, the evaluation of this program is really rigorous. So we undertake an evaluation at the end of each cycle. And throughout this program as well, so we utilise a mix of quantitative and qualitative methods, looking at different components, several components. So this includes the events that have happened across all of our 8 neighbourhoods, which provide those hyperlocal opportunities for participation. We also look at feedback on progress during that process. And we also look at the participatory budgeting process, and that's another critical component. So how that sort of allows the identification, funding and the implementation of local community projects, and how this has also been enhanced by the Newham Co-Create platform since April 2021. The programme also includes our working groups, which Emily mentioned earlier, comprises of local residents, our ward members and council officers, and also local stakeholders. And these groups are really instrumental in reviewing those project applications, deciding which projects proceed to the final voting round, and then monitoring the selected projects to ensure they develop as planned. In addition to this, we've also had project clinics as part of the evaluation. So it's been a really, really, really comprehensive approach that's looked at refining our strategy and enhancing our program outcomes, and all of the feedback loops at the end of each cycle have been inputted in terms of we ensure continuous improvements, and we adapt the program based on resident feedback and learnings. I mean, and I think that's really pivotal in terms of looking at the increase in the budget allocation from £25,000 for each community neighbourhood initially to £200,000 in recent years. And that's a direct response to how effective this programme is and the evaluation process that we've undertaken as well.
When you say effective, is it what is the underlying goal? Because, yeah, it's clearly you have so many participants and it's a great success based on the number of projects delivered, based on the number of people who participated. But what is underlying the bigger impact? Is it about a more efficient, in a way, government getting things quicker delivered? Is it about increasing levels of trust of the community? Can you tell a little more about, you talked about like those qualitative factors in your evaluation. What do you believe is the underlying impact of this program on the community?
It's a really good question. So it would be both of those things in terms of how we work with our community, how we build those relationships, how we build those honest and transparent relationships. And this program has definitely been a really critical way of doing that, in terms of not only are we honest and transparent about how this funding is spent, but our residents come together and deliberate and build consensus with us about what they'd like to see in their neighbourhood. So I think that's been really, really important. And then also internally, sort of how the council works together in a cross-directorate, cross-service way to ensure that we're working with our residents through this programme and through a number of other programmes too.
Yeah, and I can imagine that it's not only levels of trust in your council or in government, but it's also trusting your fellow citizen, your fellow resident, right? Like the person sitting in front of you comes with a totally different story, totally different background. Do you have any, so you said that they also integrate community feedback into the evaluation of the program. Could you tell a little more about it?
Yeah, I think that's something that we've really focused on in the evaluation last year, especially in terms of how we turned, so we organized focus groups with people who are part of the working groups, who are part of being a project lead, or people who attended the events as well. And we really focused on turning the feedback into recommendations for the next phase of the program, and making sure that there is a direct link between what people have said. So if you're familiar with evaluation approaches, we used thematic analysis to kind of really have an in-depth understanding of what are the main themes that people were commenting on about the program, and just making sure that we then had recommendations that were matching all the feedback that was done. And this has been also what has been really interesting in terms of that journey that we've been on, especially in the sort of like launching of People Power Places this year, which was a new name as well, and trying to bring new momentum into the program, which we can now say that we've done, right, because of those participation levels. So there was really that kind of like we took the feedback from those focus groups, and then we turned them into recommendations, which were also approved by Cabinet. And then we really tried to also organise some co-design sessions with residents to follow up, to make sure that when we are designing the next programme and the key aspects, the key kind of like touch points with how we interact with the residents, they are also involved in doing that as well. And we really kind of, because we had those recommendations that we knew were coming from residents, we were also able to make sure that we kind of follow through those recommendations. They're not just sitting in a report that sits on the website. We were really keen to make sure that we kind of follow that through. So that has been really interesting. And I think one example of how we've involved residents, not just in evaluation, but in terms of designing the next stage, is the testing of the new co-create platform, actually. So before the voting process, we organized a co-design session with about 10 residents who kind of came online, and basically we had a new voting process for the new co-create platform, which was really based on already the feedback that we had received. So we knew it was going to be more accessible and more inclusive because we knew it was based on what we heard from residents. But we still engaged with residents in terms of actually testing the options once we designed them. And I think that's really important in trying to make sure that you hear what residents are saying, but you still keep engaging with them with the final product to make sure that it actually works. And it was a really interesting experience because we came in the room with two different options in terms of how the voting might work. And we came out and we had a third option that residents had suggested. So I think that's a really, really great example of how it's important to kind of come back to residents really regularly and make sure that we keep engaging with them. Yeah.
Probably things you hadn't thought of or things that were you thought were obvious but apparently weren't. What was the third option? Without getting into the details, like what were two options and what came out as the third option?
Yeah, so we had presented to them either the option of having a budget that they could allocate to project, which was the system before, but a lot of residents felt like it was too complex and didn't really kind of understand, especially because we had so many projects this year. So there was about between like 30 and 60 projects coming through for each of the community neighborhoods. So to actually allocate the budget to each of them felt complex. That wasn't a very popular option. And then the second option was just to vote for how many projects you want. So there was unlimited options of projects, whichever ones you kind of prefer. And they also find that a bit confusing because they were like, well, how about we just keep it simple and it's your 10 favorite projects? And it was something that was coming, especially from local organizations who were saying, you know, we don't want to kind of go into that popularity contest either. So we really want to encourage residents to think about what are your 10 favorite options. And that just felt like the best and simplest way of doing it. And that's what we chose. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, up to now, it seems to me that, you know, like everything you've been doing is close to perfection. But I'm sure there are also things that could be better. So let's get into that part. So what have been your learnings after those two cycles? And let's maybe zoom in on some of the challenges or maybe some of the learnings that you've been able to turn around and that you've been able to integrate. I think, Emily, you just shared one smaller example. But what were some of the main learnings and findings out of the first two cycles?
Sure. So it's been a really interesting process for us in terms of the evaluation was a really robust piece of work that was undertaken. And it's really provided us with some clear learnings and insights from the previous cycle. And one of them highlighted the need for more diverse and representative community engagement in Newham, which was really interesting. So despite over 17,000 resident engagements, we definitely observed that there were certain demographics that were underrepresented through the programme. Now, what's really exciting about this cycle is that we've seen an increase in event participation, and this now reflects better Newham's diverse communities. And also our working groups across our eight community neighbourhoods are now more representative as well. So, and this is especially following their renewal in March 2023 ahead of the launch of the new cycle. So we now see a majority from Asian, Black and or ethnically diverse backgrounds. And that's more reflective of the communities here in Newham.
What did you change to the program to reach more diverse groups?
I think it's a combination of a number of things. I think the first one is the huge rebranding exercise that we undertook, renaming the program and having a distinct brand for the program that really re-energized and captured people's imaginations here in Newham. So I think that's been a really exciting transformation for the program. And what's also been critical is we've had our community neighborhood teams who work on the ground really tirelessly, who understand their sort of local areas, the communities there. They did a phenomenal amount of outreach, we'd see, and have brought new residents into the programme, new residents to our events that we've never seen before. And that's been really, really important. So I think it's been a really two-pronged approach here. It's been the branding, but it's also been the engagement on the ground as well.
The branding, the rebranding surprises me a little bit, or at least the importance of that in order to reach more diverse groups of the community. So, and just for context, so before the name was Community Assembly, right? Community, am I right? Yeah.
It was, and it was slightly confusing because what we also have in UM is citizens' assemblies and we have youth assemblies. And so we wanted something that was distinctive and recognizable for this program.
And so what was the outcome of the rebranding? Was it then that it's just the awareness in the community grew thanks to a distinct name and thanks to something that the community also really owned? Or what was the impact of that rebranding?
I think the impact is more visible and clear communications. And we've also got a better comm strategy. We are more visible, so we're out. It's our branding is just more visible, if that makes sense. Like, we've worked really closely with our comms and marketing team to do that. And I mean, we've utilized something called our JCD screens. And for those people in UM who don't know what those are, those are like our billboards everywhere and are sort of an opportunity. I think there's 80 across the borough. So we've had our branding on things like that. So it's just more visible and recognizable.
Because can we get into that for a moment, like the how you actually reach members of the community? What have you seen is most effective? Because, of course, that's a question that all councils, all cities around the world have, like, how do I most effectively reach my community? So what has worked for you in terms of community outreach?
The place-based infrastructure here is really important. Okay. So we've got the 8 community neighbourhood teams who work in our libraries and community centres and who are directly working with our residents and our groups. That's been a really critical part of our approach. And they're also out there doing lots of outreach on a daily basis. And they're not just delivering the People Power Places programme, but they're working across different programmes and different schemes to deliver different opportunities to our residents. And I think that's really helped. But I also think the Newham Co-Create platform has helped massively in terms of awareness and providing opportunities for our residents to access content online in addition to offline through our community centres and libraries.
One thing that I would add to that as well is how I think we're seeing once you start reaching more communities and more people generally, it's like also this exponential growth that you kind of start developing. And I think that's something that we've really tried in our comm strategy to amplify, to kind of like, once you reach out to one person, then that person is connected to other people, etc. So trying to develop that sort of networked communications as well. And one aspect of it, for example, is that we created a communications pack that we were sharing directly with residents and voluntary and community and first sector organizations, where we gave them directly access to our communications assets, so they can print them and they can share them and they could put their email signatures or whatever. So I think it's also kind of thinking as a local authority or as an organization, how you can not just drive the comms through your own communications channel, especially as a council. This is not where you reach the most residents, actually. It's mostly, like Sadia said, through outreach, but also if you then share those communications assets through people's networks and their own communications channels, considering that we have already access to all of these organizations that we work with, then you just reach so many more people as well.
Yeah, those are, I think, two great tactics. One, empowering your community and your community members to spread the word, giving them the right assets and the right whatever they need to spread the word. And secondly, now I better understand, Sadia, when you said like radically local, that it was a buzzword, but I understand now what you mean by radically local, as in like being out there in the library, on the streets, the billboards, whatever you might have to be visible in the public space, right? So we talked about communications, we talked about diversity. Was there anything you still wanted to add, Sadia, on the learnings?
I think Emily's mentioned it quite a lot in terms of the voting process and Newham Co-Create and what we've sort of learned through this process. So we mentioned that we introduced the platform in 2021, and that's been a really key factor in widening participation levels, particularly in the budgeting process, right? So what's been really interesting about that process is how we've this time around really ensured that it's a fair process in terms of there are definitely lots of offline methods and ways for people to take part in the voting process. We had three large-scale voting events as part of the big voting process, and they were on a Saturday, which was much more accessible for all of our communities, including family, young people and children. So we definitely saw different audiences there, which was really interesting. We also had voting stations set up in our libraries, which was really a great way to engage our residents, particularly those who aren't digitally savvy. So we wanted to be as accessible and inclusive as possible. And I think what this particular approach to voting has really increased our numbers. And as Amelie mentioned, we had over 10,000 residents participate in the voting process, which is more than three times the participation that we saw in the previous cycle, which is phenomenal. So I think that's been a really key finding for us. What was challenging about that process, though, was that 2,000 residents did actually vote using paper votes. So it was looking at the phenomenal amount of data entry that we all then had to do to ensure that we had that, and checking against the online votes and that sort of process as well, and thinking through, like, if we were to do this again, is there better technology available that integrates both processes that can then better use our resources, if that makes sense?
So in other words, the import of the vote, bring them into one single database, that was a challenge. Let's talk a little more about the online part, right? How have you used, because that's one of the benefits where I think you have been really creative, is you've used an online platform not only to get people to participate on their own online, but you've also actually used it during your offline events, right? Could you tell a little more about that?
Yeah, so during our offline events, I think we have really tried and embraced what, like, the good things that came out of the pandemic in terms of hybrid technology and enabling people to connect from online, and not just kind of having in-person opportunities to participate. So I think there was a lot of learning that was coming from this difficult time where a lot of those events were organized online during the pandemic. And then when everything was reopened, there was an opportunity to think about, well, we're bringing back everything in person, but who can actually come in person? Who are we missing out? Who can't actually come in person at the moment because they are still vulnerable in terms of the different stages of the pandemic? But also even after that, you know, we're kind of thinking and hearing voices from people with different challenges who actually prefer to join online. So what we've done is organizing our events through hybrid, which means that people can actually join online through Zoom and connect just the same way as they would in our in-person events. So they can see what's happening in the library, because all our events are also organized in our libraries. And then they have an online facilitator who supports them to just do the exact same exercises and activities and interact the same way with people in the room as well, which has been a really great and, I think, interesting exercise in terms of trying to manage those two aspects. So it is a bit of logistics for sure. And we've definitely learned how to make it smoother and how to make it more interactive for people, both online and offline. But we're really happy now in terms of how we enable people in the room who are from the library. We have always have a big screen in the library where people who come in can see people who are on Zoom. And we always kind of say hello to each other at the start of the sessions. And then, so thanks to the online facilitator as well, it means that people who wouldn't be able to come into library, I don't know, on a Thursday evening at 6 p.m., can join in online and still take part in the priority setting or still kind of share their ideas as well. And we have always, also in how we design our sessions, we try and make it as interactive as possible and to try and encourage residents to feedback to each other what they've been talking about in their breakout groups or in their tables and everything. So we also have that element of, like, let's hear what people online have been talking about and let's hear what people in the room have been talking about. So yeah, this hybrid element has been working really well. And we are seeing at the moment, obviously, we're now quite a few years from 2020. So we are seeing kind of like a little bit less people joining online, but it really depends at each stage of the cycle. So in the winter, we tend to see more people joining online, and in summer, it's a bit less popular.
That's interesting. Could you tell a little more about the Co-Create platform? What have you seen as the main benefits of also having an online platform in place, and what are maybe looking towards the future, your hopes for, you know, for the Co-Create platform, Sajja?
Sure. So we use the online platform to encourage participation across the cycle, which is what's really exciting about it, because it's a really great way of keeping residents informed about the program's journey, sharing progress on the projects being delivered, and closing the feedback loop, which I think is really critical to all engagement work. So on NEWM Co-Create, we use the different phases of engagement to make sure that residents are always up to date with what's happening with People Power Places. So at any given time, residents can access all of the different phases of the program to look back at the decisions that have been made by the community and how it's being implemented. And I think this really increases our level of transparency. And I think that's also been really critical to this. And it's quite unique when we think about the traditional ways that councils have been using digital technology previously. And I think because of the pandemic, we've all had to shift in this new way of working, and it's getting better because it's been a couple of years. One thing that we're still working on is how to balance transparency and accessibility, and to make sure that information is both available when needed, but also really digestible. So some residents have fed back that the platform can be a little bit tricky to navigate because of the amount of information available. So how can we get better at doing that? And that's something that we have been working on this year with our new communications.
That makes sense, but it's interesting to see a trade-off between transparency and accessibility, making communications for the ones who don't want to read it all, you know, like making it very concise, but then having that read more link if you want for the ones who want to know it all. Well, I guess there is so much more for us to talk about. We could probably go on for another hour, but it's almost time. I'd like to just ask you one final question, which is, before, so let's go back in time, and before you embarked on this whole journey of community engagement and working on the People Power program, what would be the one thing you wish you had known before getting started on this?
I think that's an interesting one, because we were thinking about talking about the level of participation that we actually have had and how that has impacted our resources and how we were planning out the cycle. And obviously we've talked quite a bit about it now, but I think it's really interesting, and especially after the summer when we received 366 applications from the community, and it was almost overwhelming for us, even though we were really happy, because we were distributing the funding in 1.6 million in one go for the first time across the borough, because before in the first years, but sorry, in the 2 years before, it was £800,000 per year. So we were really worried that we wouldn't get enough applications, and how that have an impact in terms of the voting process. And it just turned out that we had lots and lots of applications, which is great. It really kind of testified to the amount of momentum that the new branding and the new cycle had brought in NEWM. But what that meant is, it also meant that in terms of feasibility assessment process, in terms of making sure that the shortlisting process is done by residents who are part of the working group, all of those processes, it means like there was a lot of impact from the amount of applications that we had to review and make sure that, you know, each of these applications were getting the attention that they deserved, and that we still kind of kept to our timelines and deadlines to deliver the program the way that we had designed it as well. So this was something that I think on reflection, it would have been great to know that we would have done as well, in a sense, just to kind of like get organized to the level of like scaling that we reached. So I think that's just, obviously I'm kind of thinking about it in a bit of a funny way, but I think it's also testifies to the challenges around scaling a program, and this is really the journey that I think People Power Places has been on, in terms of, you know, starting with something that that was the initial approach where everything was in place, but it was much more small scale to kind of a full scale where we're constantly learning because we are scaling the program. And every time you add residents and every time you add participation, it also has impacts on resourcing and kind of thinking about how we make sure that we keep being efficient and in the way that we work as well. Mm-hmm.
I think that's something you can be incredibly proud of, how you've been able to scale this program and get it to such an impact. Sadia, do you have an aha moment from the past 3 years?
I think for me, I mean, I've only been in post for a year and a half, and it's been a huge learning curve because Newham is divided into the 8 community neighbourhoods, which are all so unique and different. And that has been incredible to see. And what's been really interesting is how our neighbourhood teams work similarly, but also differently on the ground as well. And I think that's been really quite incredible for me to sort of see that and see how they've done that. That's quite an aha moment, but it's just been super, super interesting seeing that and seeing the dynamics of place and people in each area that we have here. Mm.
Well, thank you both. Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Sadia, for this fascinating conversation. I've learned a lot. And I think there's also for other cities really a lot to learn from you. So we'll make sure to add a couple of links in this podcast and for others to be able to check out your work. So congrats again and thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on our journey towards a democratic future. Subscribe to the podcast to stay connected. Next month, we'll be back with another Trailblazer. And remember, democracy is a journey, it's not just a destination. Stay curious, engaged, and active in your local democracy. Until next time.